case would be 061612, Topeka Corporation, Juniper Networks Incorporated.
May it please the court. This case is on appeal from a judgment of non-infringement based on the claim construction order on 12 claim terms of 4 patents and 2 different patent families.
Let me ask you about that just as a threshold matter. The only thing I could see in the record before us was there was an invalidity claim of indefiniteness, which the judge dismissed or granted partial summary judgment on. Are there any other invalidity counterclaims pending out there?
No, there are not.
So the only invalidity issue raised was the indefiniteness one that was taken care of by the judge.
Right, by some indefiniteness. It's invalidity claims. No, the patents there are underlying invalidity arguments, yes, based on prior art, but not on indefiniteness.
Were they counterclaims or affirmative defenses?
Affirmative defenses.
So there are no other pending. I mean, this goes to the issue of whether or not we have a final judgment here.
There are no
counterclaims. So there are no pending.
So there are no counterclaims on any other subject?
No.
So any validity issues were raised by way of a defense?
By affirmative defense. The 710 patent family includes 3 of the 4 patents, and the 4th patent is the 127 patent. The district court erred in construing the claim terms of the 710 patent family by reading limitations into the claims that restrict the claims to only ATM technology, and the claims were carefully drafted not to include any such limitations.
But the ATM issue is really involving three claim terms, right?
It's really involving 9 claim terms. But not all. I submit that the ATM issue is the major issue with respect to the entire 710 patent family, which includes 3 patents and 9 of the 12 claim terms. And the district court erred in construing those claim terms by reading an ATM limitation into the claim term, both explicitly and implicitly.
Is that including the layer, the claim construction of the layer?
Yes.
And how does the ATM impact the construction of the term?
What the impact of the district court's construction was to define the claim term in such a way as to restrict the invention to covering only an ATM-specific invention. And with respect to layer, it's really pushing the invention not to the low layer 3, which is what the invention is all about. I'll touch on that more in a moment. But it is pushing it to layer 2, which is an ATM network. And Toshiba's invention really is in between layers 2 and 3. So it gave rise to a non-infringement argument that if you're between 2 and 3, the fact that the district court's claim construction parks you right at 2, then you avoid infringement.
Well, let me ask you, just in connection with that, but not on that point exactly, the other side makes at least a second argument that if we are able to affirm one limitation per claim, we can still affirm, even if we were to disagree with, in other words, even if we were to disagree with the district court judge on certain of the claim constructions, we could still affirm the judgment. It seems to me in the grade review, we really take issue with that.
We do take issue with that because it's very complicated. There are 22 claims. There are 12 claim terms. There are 7, I believe, independent claims. And depending on which claim term you reverse, it may be harmful, it may be dispositive.
Well, which claim construction do you say is supports the judgment of non-infringement. We're, don't we need to know that?
What the district court has done is adopted in whole Juniper's property claim construction. It is riddled with non-infringement arguments.
Yeah, but
now, whether any one particular claim term is dispositive is difficult to say because there are so many claims and so many claim terms. So I would submit that you can characterize the district court's error by reading in an ATM limitation, both either explicitly or implicitly, in all of the claim terms of the 710 patent family. And with respect to the 127 patent, the district court read in an upstream directionality limitation into the independent claims. If we do not get reversal of the ATM issue with respect to the 710 patent family, and the upstream directionality limitation with respect to the 127 patent, we lose. So to frame it in terms of what's dispositive, there's a dispositive issue with respect to the 710 patent. There's a dispositive issue with respect to the 127 patent. But I don't think that it's a simple analysis to simply identify if I take this one claim term from this claim and affirm that, then Toshiba loses. It's more complicated than that.
There were two issues.
But the issues manifest themselves differently throughout the claim construction. For example, in the where the district court explicitly read an ATM, the district court defined virtual connection to be a logical connection between two nodes of an ATM network.
Right. Yeah. No, I can see virtual connection, virtual path, and plurality networks. Yeah, I see.
That's where it explicitly came in.
Yeah, I don't. Leaving that aside, I mean, let's assume we agree with that. I'm not sure necessarily that leads us to saying that the ATM, that analysis, even if we reject that analysis, infects necessarily what you said, it infects the upstream analysis.
No, the upstream is separate. That's the 127.
Okay.
That's right. So staying within the 710 family, the 710 patent, the 322 patent, the LAO patent, we look now at the...
So is the ATM for those, or is the ATM limitation?
Explicitly.
Explicitly, okay. And the 127 is the upstream?
Explicitly, yes.
But if we don't agree with you that the layer and her, let's assume that we were to agree with the district court judge on her construction of the layer and disagree with you that it's necessarily infected by the ATM analysis, then on that basis we could affirm non-infringement on the 710.
If you affirm the ATM explicit?
No, if we affirm her construction of the layer.
That is not true.
Because,
and this is where it gets complicated, because this term exists in different patents. With respect to one patent, the construction of layer is dispositive.
Which patent?
Arguably dispositive.
The 322
patent, because it gave rise at least to a non-infringement argument that storing at a layer lower than layer 3 means storing at layer 2.
Well,
and we submit that is not what this invention is about. But when you go to that claim term into the 710 patent, it says transferring a packet without performing a network layer level analysis. Layer is in there, but it's saying I'm not doing layer 3. That's what this invention is all about. Don't do layer 3. They've gone to the 322 patent and said if you're storing below layer 3, we don't do layer 3. Let's park them at 2. Well, they don't do 2. They do 2.5. And that's what Toshiba's invention is all about, is to find the shortcut that gets you out of 3, but not at 2. So we're at 2.5. So the construction has given rise to a non-infringement argument that we think is unwarranted, and that the construction is unnecessarily limited in that regard. So that's an example of why it is not a cut and dried analysis as to affirm one claim term when your job is done.
Okay, well, leaving that aside then, what about, at least on the 127 patent, if we would agree with the district court's claim construction on policy information,
we confirm non-infringement on the 127.
So if that's the case, your argument is we're still left with the 710 and the 80 patent before?
710 and 322, assuming your argument on 322. Yes, the 710 is where they are. I would like to go back just for a second on the 127 patent with the upstream. Again, it's the same, the nature of the error is the same. The claim limitation is storing information in the memory about a node. It's not about an upstream node, it's not about a downstream node, it's about a node. And the claim term, the claim language is drafted to not include that limitation. And it's the burden of Juniper or the district court to find a reason to depart from that claim language and to pull a limitation in. And there is no reason to do so. The claim language is plain on its face. I'd like to go back now to the implicit ATM limitations. And there are three claim terms from the 710 patent family where we are making reference to connections. And the district court has read in an existing limitation. And what that has done is to say that these inventions, to refer to something in the network, it must be pre-existing. In other words, you have to have this existing ATM connection in order to refer to it. And that's simply not in the claim language. These definitions were adopted by the district court. They adopted Juniper's arguments, and Juniper's arguments are based on dictionary definitions, which are self-serving to get the term existing into the plain language. The plain language should control in all these respects. Just to summarize again with the
why don't you save the time for rebuttal for safety and minutes between the summary and verdict? Unless you want to use your rebuttal for summarize, feel free.
So the district court's claim construction is contrary to the precedent set forth in Phillips, because under Phillips, there are only three bases upon which a district court could have relied in departing from the claim language as drafted and reading these limitations into the claims. If the claim term itself were understood by one skilled in the art to be limited to ATM, then it would have been justified. But the record below is clear that these claim terms are not ATM specific. The specification is clear that this invention is not directed to ATM.
And by specification, you're referring to the summary which says that there is
ATM. I'm speaking throughout the specification, the field of the invention. The field of the invention says that it's suitable for an internet environment. Internet environment is a network of networks. There are disparate network types out there. This invention applies to interconnecting disparate network types. The background of the invention explains that there's a bottleneck going between different types of networks, the bottleneck in layer 3 processing. We avoid that. The specifications give examples of X25 frame radar as other examples of connection-oriented networks that Toshiba's inventions can be used with, and these technologies were not read into the were not drafted into the claims, so the claim language has to control it. There's no disclaimer in the specification to say that this is an ATM invention. This is not a single embodiment case where the invention is ATM. Toshiba came from an ATM background. They built ATM devices. They described this invention in terms of interconnecting ATM networks, but this invention is not limited. And the specification throughout makes clear that other networks technologies.
The issue of finality, from our perspective, really revolves around the nature of the stipulated judgment here and the Third Circuit's law with respect to what is necessary in order for a consent judgment to be deemed final.
Okay, but can we leave that second one? I know that's the lead argument, but frankly, that gives me some pause. Because your second argument is if you affirm one limitation per claim, you're okay to affirm. Let's move on. And if one were to agree with that hypothetically, shouldn't that give one pause that you're not leading with that argument, that your main argument is no, don't affirm, you've got the demand here?
Well, I guess my reaction to that is it's an issue of jurisdiction, and I don't know how we have a choice not to raise it. I mean, this court's been very strict with parties in terms of identifying where jurisdictional problems may or may not exist.
Well, why does the stipulation give us the problem if we construe, if we assume if we could affirm any one of the limitations and therefore affirm the judgment, not reach the others, so it's not covered by the stipulation which says if you remand it, you've got to go on? Why is there a problem with jurisdiction?
That's certainly an improvement over the situation that we briefed, because that was not the situation that was briefed here. I mean, that's an argument we made, but that was not a concession that Toshiba was willing to make. They were unwilling to identify any claims on which they could lose on below. So we have a situation where it was either affirm all, or if you make any change to any claim, you have to send this case back.
Well, they kind of conceded that this morning, at least a bit of it, right?
I hear some concessions being made. That's correct. But I think that's I think that's a situation that wasn't known to us until 3 seconds ago when that argument was made. And I would also add that if you read the Third Circuit's cases, Verzilli and the like, they appear to take a very rigid line on stipulated judgments. It must end the litigation no matter what. And even under the scenario we're now talking about, there still is an option for sending the case back and allowing for further litigation. But I certainly...
But in that
only if there's reversal, right?
That's right. And I think as I read...
That's always the case.
Well, I read these Third Circuit cases as carving out a special exception for consent judgments that may not necessarily be present, for example, in a final judgment from a summary judgment of non-infringement. But I certainly agree that the situation is a lot different when you have at least the Court of Appeals with the option of saying, well, okay, maybe there was error over here, but there wasn't error on this particular claim. We can affirm on that basis. I think that's been one of our biggest... concerns in looking at this judgment as it's come up is that it effectively, at least as it was briefed, it effectively strips the Court of Appeals from its ability to say, well, okay, let's say there was a mistake on ATM, which we don't agree with, but let's say there was. We can affirm on all these other grounds. There are 4 or 5 claim terms in the 710 patent in addition to ATM.
Well, that's true. So let me get to that, which is that the other side's response to that is the claim construction of a layer, which is arguably an alternative basis, you might say, to affirming even if we reject the 3 ATM terms, right?
That's correct, absolutely.
And their answer, what's your answer to their argument that they made this morning that the construction of Lair was infected by the ATM analogy?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because her construction of Lair is one of the layers in the Open Systems Interface Protocol Stack, which of course is an open system protocol stack. It is open to all kinds of network technology. Now, the argument I heard from counsel was, well, it really means layer 2. Well, layer 2 is not limited to ATM. There are other networking technologies that operate at layer 2 of the OSI protocol stack. So I don't understand the argument that definition is somehow restricted to ATM. It is, in my opinion, the prototype of a definition having nothing to do with ATM. What they really take issue with is the claims of the 322 patent were written. They wrote them to say a layer lower than layer 3. Which is different than the way the claims in the 710 patent, for example, were written. Well, that's not the way they're worded. So what they really want is they want a redo on the wording of the claims of the 322 patent. I don't think it's an issue with the definition of the term layer. It's the way the claims were written. And so to me, that's I don't think that's a very sound argument to suggest somehow by saying a layer in the OSI protocol stack, you've infected that with ATM. And I think one other thing that's problematic here is that I'm hoping we have concessions that this court can affirm on these terms other than the 3 terms where there was an ATM interpretation made. But I'm not sure we have that completed concession.
But why do we need that concession? Why does this court need that concession to apply the notion that if we can affirm one limitation per claim, we can affirm the judgment of non-infringement?
I think, frankly, I mean, our argument is that under the harmless error statute, that's the penalty, in effect, if you will, for Toshiba's failure to lay out the record in a way that would enable it. So it's my view the court should be able to do that.
Well, what are the facts you're referring to that were lacking?
There's no facts in the record, certainly facts on which a court of appeals could rely on, about how the Juniper accused devices and networks operate. All you have is part
of the record. You're talking about on the infringement
side. Yes.
You're not talking about facts pertaining to the claim.
Well, that's an interesting debate because this court says there are no facts. But
well,
I do think
that's the point I'm getting to. This is what we say, and we know it's not true, but we say it. So how does that affect? How does that affect the jurisdictional point?
Well, I think that our argument is
you're not saying, are you, that we have to go back for factual development to support the claim construction? All right.
Well, I think that that is part of the problem here.
I read your brief to say that, so maybe I misunderstood it.
The principal focus.
I understand how it fits with the jurisprudence, such as it is.
The principal focus is that what's really missing from this record are the facts to judge whether there's infringement or not, and also the facts to judge whether a particular claim construction, even if it were changed, would implicate the infringement judgment, which is the only.
They've already conceded that they can't. There would be no infringement.
Well, I mean, one example of what
they can have off the table.
I think that's, as I said, that's something that I think is a big help for us. The only thing that I think is missing from that is, if, for example, the court were to modify the construction of what we consider to be the three ATM terms in some way that doesn't go as far as Toshiba suggests, what's the implication of that sort of slightly modified claim construction? Does that impact the ultimate judgment of non-infringement? I don't think we have any evidence in the record here that would enable this court to make that determination. So if the court makes any change to the ATM terms, let's say we're also agree on some of the other alternative terms, then what do we do? So there's a significance with respect to changes made on the ATM terms. There's also the issue of what about the alternative grounds, such as other elements in the claims.
Going back to your jurisdictional issue for a second.
Yes.
You say that if we were to find that the Third Circuit law that you indicate with regard to the issue of finality applies, we lack jurisdiction. Right?
That's correct, Your
Honor. What happens practically to this case now? You have a judgment of non-infringement, stipulated judgment, which leaves open all these other issues with regard to the defenses and claims, et cetera, right?
They would essentially reappear in the case below.
They will reappear, and now what happens to the case?
I think the case goes back to the district court. Granted, the stipulation doesn't actually address explicitly the issue of what happens if there's a dismissal for lack of jurisdiction, but I think in the Verma case, the Third Circuit essentially said, well, we're going to allow the proceedings to restart at the district court. At that point, we would move for summary judgment of non-infringement. And
based on the existing claim construction.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And we would set up a factual record so we wouldn't be here arguing about the significance of particular terms. We could set that record up. That's what we would do. On the ATM issue, I think it's worth noting a few points about that, since that seems to be an issue on which there's been a lot of briefing at the very least. It's our view that there are basically three key issues of evidence here that demonstrate that what Chief Judge Robinson did here in terms of construing what we consider to be the three ATM claim terms, virtual connection, virtual path, and plurality networks, was absolutely correct. One overriding thing that jumps out for me when you read these specifications is that this invention is a bypass pipe in an ATM network. It is described in virtually the entire specification in that environment. Now, counsels argue, well, the internet is discussed and other networks are discussed. There's only one passing reference in the summary, in the specification, to a network other than ATM in which the bypass pipe could possibly be operating.
Yeah, but on column 3 of the 710, they clearly refer to the ATM, the grain relay, and the X25 as examples of a virtual connection.
Well, every other reference in that specification to a network other than ATM is talking about the outbound networks. This is an invention that's designed, we don't dispute, extensive patent invention, but it's designed to essentially connect up internet networks. And it does that by digging a pipe into the ATM core. That was the description of the invention. So it's not surprising that, in fact, you would see other networks mentioned on the outbound sides. But, for example, if you look at figure 36, you see very clearly you have Ethernet, and then in the middle, you've got bypass pipe. That's what this, and with ATM networks described over the top of it. That's what this patent is directed to. So the fact that other networks are mentioned is not at all surprising. In fact, the title of the 322 patent is IP over ATM, which was, of course, a change that the examiner required in the prosecution. And we think the prosecution history of the 322 patent is one of the particularly significant issues here, because Toshiba argued to the patent office that our invention isn't limited to ATM. They've repeatedly made this argument in their briefs. However, that argument wasn't accepted by the examiner. In fact, the examiner specifically says, only certain of your arguments I deem persuasive, and it was not the ATM, my invention isn't limited to ATM, in terms of trying to get over this obviousness type double patenting rejection. Rather, it was our invention is, the prior art doesn't show a cut-through path, which is another word for a bypass pipe. The examiner says, I consider that to be persuasive. Oh, and by the way, I'm also requiring you to amend the title of your patent to IP over ATM. I would also add that Chief Judge Robson had before her testimony by Juniper's expert witness, who articulated that to him, a person of ordinary skill in the art, a person skilled in the art at the very least, when he read the specifications of these patents, they were only talking about virtual connection, virtual path, in terms of ATM. To him, that's what those terms implicated. So I think that given the collective evidence that she had, that was a perfectly appropriate decision for her to make. Whether one considers that evidence on which you have to defer or not, this court's precedents dictate say no, but still, it's part of the overall package of evidence. There are also a number of other terms, for example, in the 710 patent, such as available to receive, identification information, claim elements in the 127 patent that we think are very clearly, were correctly construed by Judge Robinson below, simply consistent with their plain and ordinary meaning. It's simply the way the claims are written. And we can't, you know, we can't at this stage of the proceedings change how they decide to claim their invention.
In the logical network, they're objecting to her the claim construction of logical network, which appears in the 80 patent. It seems to me they're advocating a broader construction and not a narrower construction. Right?
So, yet in their brief at page 35, in the blue brief, they argue that the construction that she adopted was urged upon her by us for non-infringement purposes. So it is unclear what the concern Toshiba has with that particular limitation.
Well, I mean, leads one to believe the only concern would be the validity, the potential challenge and the broad construction to the written description of the
empire. I think it's absolutely clear that there are a number of terms that are before this court that have that neither party is advocating has anything to do with infringement, it seems. I think logical networks is one that there appears to be a disagreement. They seem to think that her construction means non-infringement, and we did not include that in our detailed stipulation of non-infringement. So you could look at Juniper's perspective as being one related to validity. So I think it's unclear, it seems to me, what the significance of that particular construction is to the ultimate judgment. Again, I think that's just another illustration of where this particular approach to sort of packaging these Markman hearings up on appeal is a dangerous process, particularly in a case like this, where you've got 22 claims and 4 patents, where I don't agree at all that the issues are just one of one that's simple and discernible from the record. It is, as counsel suggested, quite complex, this case. And you've got patents that consume 50 columns of text. I mean, on the ATM argument, if you accept Toshiba's suggestion, they're basically saying, look, let's just trim out of the specification 54 of the 55 columns, because it's just all that is reading the preferred embodiment into the claims. I submit that's not what this court's Phillips case was all about. I see that I'm out of time unless anyone has any other questions.
All right. Thank you.
As a first point, the Third Circuit cases submitted by the counsel related to consent judgments, and there was no consent judgment here. Juniper did not stipulate to this judgment, and in fact, probably motion to have the case remanded. With respect to the different technologies mentioned in the ATM patents, the ATM frame relay and X25 are not outbound site. They are connection-oriented networks that are usable with Toshiba's network.
Really? Was this a procedure that was adopted in this case then, was the idea of the court?
I'm sorry?
The procedure that we're arguing about, you're arguing about this morning, that even whether it's a stipulated judgment, but that was, whatever it is, was devised by the court, right? You said you don't agree with it.
I don't agree that a...
Who put it together? Who they're arguing against it. So it was the court that devised this procedure? That allowed the case to come up in its present posture?
No, the fact that it's a final judgment makes the case appealable. And
well, then why did you want to remand it?
We did not want to have it remanded. They wanted to have it remanded.
Well, why do you say this is not a final judgment? I mean, you're here on appeal because
it was a final judgment. It was a final judgment. We're saying it was a final judgment. And they wanted, they did not stipulate to the judgment. They stipulated as to form only.
The stipulation says the parties therefore agree that the court may enter the final judgment.
But no,
is that a stipulation to the entry of the final judgment?
They stipulated as to form only. They put that under their signature block.
And that takes you to say out of the Third Circuit law.
I think that it doesn't even get there because the issue is whether we're on final judgment, and we are. There's been a final determination of non-infringement based on the dispositive claim construction.
And the dispositive ones besides ATM and upstream are what?
There are two main dispositive issues, ATM and upstream issues, not infringement.
So there's two paths. What about very, very important?
Family and money.
That would prove them all. That would take care of all of
those two issues. All the claim terms should be reviewed.
Could support a judgment of affirmance.
If all 12 claim terms were affirmed, yes, they would be affirmed.
With those elements in it?
No.
Well, what is it that you're saying?
With respect to the 710.
Before, that if ATM and the 710 upstream and the 127 are affirmed here, then.
But to be clear, I did make clear that those issues manifest themselves differently in different claim terms.
Well, that you did.
Their ATM is explicitly read into three claim limitations.
I know you did. And no, is it just those terms? There are no other terms, regardless of where they appear, how they read in the different patterns.
Nine terms are affected by the ATM issue. One term is dispositive, is impacted by the upstream issue. That is positive issue
in nine claims.
Nine terms.
Nine terms. ATM is a term.
ATM is a term that is explicit, has been explicitly read into the three of the claim limitations for routed networks, virtual connection, and virtual path.
So where are the other two? We've got a total of 12.
There are two claim terms that we submit improperly construed and should be reviewed by this court, router device and stream information, that are in the 127 patent, but we would submit that they are not dispositive with the upstream limitation with respect to that patent is dispositive. See you next time.
Mr. Rainey, we gave him extra time. Do you need to respond to what he just said? And only what he said.
My only response, Your Honor, is it appears he's backing away from any concession that there can be alternative grounds of affirmance on the claims. I don't think that is at all clear in this record.